Now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Lois Bruin. Today I'll be reading two stories. The first is from the book Tales from Times Past, edited by Brian Holm. The Water of Life by Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm. There was once a king who was so ill that it was thought impossible that his life could be saved. He had three sons, and they were all in great distress on his account, and they went into the castle gardens and wept at the thought that he must die. An old man came up to them and asked the cause of their grief. They told him that their father was dying and nothing could save him. The old man said, "There is only one remedy which I know. It is the water of life. If he drinks of it, he will recover, but it is very difficult to find." The eldest son said, "I will soon find it," and he went to the sick man to ask permission to go in search of the water of life, as that was the only thing to cure him. "No," said the king, "the danger is too great. I would rather die." But he persisted so long that at last the king gave his permission. The prince thought, "If I bring this water, I shall be the favorite, and I shall inherit the kingdom." So he set off, and when he had ridden some distance, he came upon a dwarf standing on the road who cried, "Whither away so fast?" "Stupid little fellow," said the prince proudly, "what business is it of yours?" and rode on. The little man was very angry and made an evil vow. Soon after, the prince came to a gorge in the mountains, and the farther he rode, the narrower it became till he could go no farther. His horse could go neither forward nor turn around for him to dismount. So there he sat, jammed in. The sick king waited a long time for him, but he never came back. Then the second son said, "Father, let me go and find the water of life," thinking, "If my brother is dead, I shall have the kingdom." The king at first refused to let him go, but at last he gave his consent. So the prince started on the same road as his brother and met the same dwarf, who stopped him and asked where he was going in such a hurry. "Little snippet, what does it matter to you?" he said, and rode away without looking back. But the dwarf cast a spell over him, and he, too, got into a narrow gorge like his brother, where he could go neither forwards nor backwards. This is what happens to the haughty. As the second son also stayed away, the youngest one offered to go and fetch the water of life, and at last the king was obliged to let him go. When he met the dwarf, and he asked him where he was hurrying to, he stopped and said, "I am searching for the water of life because my father is dying."
"Do you know where it is to be found?"
"No," said the prince.
"As you have spoken pleasantly to me and not been haughty like your false brothers, I will help you and tell you how to find the water of life. It flows from a fountain in the courtyard of an enchanted castle, but you will never get in unless I give you an iron rod and two loaves of bread. With the rod, strike three times on the iron gate of the castle, and it will spring open. Inside, you will find two lions with wide open jaws, but if you throw a loaf to each, they will be quiet. Then you must make haste to fetch the water of life before it strikes 12, or the gates of the castle will close, and you will be shut in." The prince thanked him, took the rod and the loaves, and set off. When he reached the castle, all was just as the dwarf had said. At the third knock, the gate flew open, and when he had pacified the lions with the loaves, he walked into the castle. In the great hall, he found several enchanted princes, and he took the rings from their fingers. He also took a sword and a loaf which were lying by them. On passing into the next room, he found a beautiful maiden who rejoiced at his coming. She embraced him and said that he had saved her and should have the whole of her kingdom, and if he would come back in a year, she would marry him.
She also told him where to find the fountain with the enchanted water, but she said he must make haste to get out of the castle before the clock struck 12. Then he went on and came to a room where there was a beautiful bed freshly made, and as he was very tired, he thought he would take a little rest. So he lay down and fell asleep. When he woke, it was striking 11:45. He sprang up in a fright and ran to the fountain and took some of the water in a cup which was lying near, and then hurried away. The clock struck just as he reached the iron gate, and it banged so quickly that it took off a bit of his heel. He was rejoiced at having got some of the water of life, and hastened on his homeward journey. He again passed the dwarf, who, when he saw the sword and the loaf, said, "Those things will be of much service to you. You will be able to strike down whole armies with the sword, and the loaf will never come to an end." The prince did not want to go home without his brothers, and he said, "Good dwarf, can you not tell me where my brothers are? They went in search of the water of life before I did, but they never came back."
"They are both stuck fast in a narrow mountain gorge. I cast a spell over them because of their pride."
And then the prince begged so hard that they might be released that at last the dwarf yielded. But he warned him against them and said, "Beware of them. They have bad hearts." He was delighted to see his brothers when they came back and told them all that had happened to him, how he had found the water of life and brought a goblet full with him, how he had released a beautiful princess who would wait a year for him and then marry him, and he would become a great prince. Then they rode away together and came to a land where famine and war were raging. The king thought he would be utterly ruined, so great was the destitution. The prince went to him and gave him the loaf, and with it he fed and satisfied his whole kingdom. The prince also gave him his sword, and he smote the whole army of his enemies with it, and then he was able to live in peace and quiet. Then the prince took back his sword and his loaf, and the three brothers rode on. But they had to pass through two more countries where war and famine were raging, and each time the prince gave his sword and his loaf to the king, and in this way he saved three kingdoms. After that, they took a ship and crossed the sea. During the passage, the two elder brothers said to each other, "Our youngest brother found the water of life, and we did not, so our father will give him the kingdom, which we ought to have, and he will take away the luck from us." This thought made them very vindictive, and they made up their minds to get rid of him. They waited till he was asleep, and then they emptied the water of life from his goblet and took it themselves and filled up his cup with salt sea water. As soon as they got home, the youngest prince took his goblet to the king so that he might drink of the water which was to make him well. But after drinking only a few drops of the sea water, he became more ill than ever. As he was bewailing himself, his two elder sons came to him and accused the youngest of trying to poison him, and said that they had the real water of life, and gave him some. No sooner had he drunk it than he felt better, and he soon became as strong and well as he had been in his youth. Then the two went to their youngest brother and mocked him, saying, "It was you who found the water of life. You had all the trouble, while we have the reward. You should have been wiser and kept your eyes open. We stole it from you while you were asleep on the ship. When the end of the year comes, one of us will go and bring away the beautiful princess. But don't dare to betray us. Our father will certainly not believe you, and if you say a single word, you will lose your life. Your only chance is to keep silence." The old king was very angry with his youngest son, thinking that he had tried to take his life. So he had the court assembled to give judgment upon him, and it was decided that he must be secretly got out of the way. One day, when the prince was going out hunting, thinking no evil, the king's huntsman was ordered to go with him. Seeing the huntsman look sad, the prince said to him, "My good huntsman, what is the matter with you?" The huntsman answered, "I can't bear to tell you, and yet I must. The prince said, "Say it out. Whatever it is, I will forgive you." "Alas," said the huntsman, "I am to shoot you dead. It is the king's command." The prince was horror-stricken and said, "Dear huntsman, do not kill me. Give me my life. Let me have your dress, and you shall have my royal robes." The huntsman said, "I will gladly do so. I could never have shot you." So they changed clothes, and the huntsman went home, but the prince wandered away into the forest. After a time, 3 wagon loads of gold and precious stones came to the king for his youngest son. They were sent by the kings who had been saved by the prince's sword and his miraculous loaf, and who now wished to show their gratitude. Then the old king thought, "What if my son really was innocent?" and said to his people, "If only he were still alive, how sorry I am that I ordered him to be killed." "He is still alive," said the huntsman. "I could not find it in my heart to carry out your commands." And he told the king what had taken place. A load fell from the king's heart on hearing the good news, and he sent out a proclamation to all parts of his kingdom that his son was to come home, where he would be received with great favor. In the meantime, the princess had caused a road to be made of pure shining gold leading to her castle, and told her people that whoever came riding straight along it would be the true bridegroom, and they were to admit him. But anyone who came on either side of the road or the other would not be the right one, and he was not to be let in. When the year had almost passed, the eldest prince thought that he would hurry to the princess, and by giving himself out as her deliverer, would gain a wife and a kingdom as well. So he rode away, and when he saw the beautiful golden road, he thought it would be 1,000 pities to ride upon it. So he turned aside and rode to the right of it. But when he reached the gate, the people told him that he was not the true bridegroom, and he had to go away. Soon after, the second prince came, and when he saw the golden road, he thought it would be 1,000 pities for his horse to tread upon it. So he turned aside and rode up upon the left of it. But when he reached the gate, he was also told that he was not the true bridegroom, and like his brother, was turned away. When the year had quite come to an end, the third prince came out of the wood to ride to his beloved, and through her to forget all his past sorrows. So on he went, thinking only of her, and wishing to be with her. And he never even saw the golden road. His horse cantered right along the middle of it, and when he reached the gate it was flung open, and the princess received him joyfully, and called him her deliverer and the lord of her kingdom. Their marriage was celebrated without delay and with much rejoicing. When it was over, she told him that his father had called him back and forgiven him. So he went to him and told him everything, how his brothers had deceived him and how they had forced him to keep silence. The old king wanted to punish them, but they had taken a ship and sailed away over the sea, and they never came back as long as they lived. You've been listening to a story from the book Tales from Times Past, edited by Brian Holm, published by the Viking Press. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gilfillan. The executive producer is Carla Tanella, and I'm Lois Broom. Thank you.
it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Ellen Whitcher. Today I'll be reading three stories from Legends of the Sun and Moon by Eric and Tessa Hadley. The Bonfire. Creating the world took time, you know, and Bayami, the Great Spirit, sometimes made mistakes. The first birds and animals he made, for instance, grew and grew to an enormous size, and then there wasn't enough for them to eat, so they fought each other. They fought in the dark. Bayami hadn't made light yet. There was only the dim light of the stars. This all made the earth a very uncomfortable place, so Bayami and Punjil lived in the Milky Way, where it was cold, 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 far out in space. Every day the gods collected firewood for a great bonfire. Shivered Punjil. Haven't we got enough yet? When do we set fire to this lot? We don't, said Bayami. We haven't got fire yet. Haven't got it? Well, why don't we go and get it? I'm freezing. Don't hurry me, said Bayami. Everything in its own good time. Well, it's all very well. Whee! A great white egg came hurtling through space. Punjil put out his hand to catch it, but it slipped through his fingers and smashed. Oh, look at this mess, said Punjil. There was egg over everything. Yellow egg and clear egg all over their lovely bonfire. Whoosh! The wonderful egg burst into flame. Crackle! The tinder dry wood blazed up in no time. Hurrah! Shouted Punjil. Fire! I'm warm at last. Didn't I tell you? Said Bayami. The gods toasted themselves in front of the bonfire that blazed higher and higher, yellow and red and blue and orange. It made more light than the dim light of the stars. It made so much light that when the gods looked down, they could see the whole world for the first time. The gold light on the mountaintops and the green leaves of the trees dancing in the wind, the tall gray waves of the sea, the silver sparkling of the streams and waterfalls, and the yellow sands of the desert, and the clouds that spread their shades. So this is what you've been up to in the dark, said Punjil. It's beautiful. Is it for us? Not only for us, said Bayami. I want to make some new creatures to live in it. I've had enough of those birds and animals that have grown too big. They were all very well for the dark, and now I'm planning something much more delicate and complicated. Silvery fishes to fill the lakes and rivers, insects small as grains of sand, and red birds to hum among the flowers, snakes that slip out of their skins, scampering mice. I've no end of ideas. The fire's going out, cried Punjil. What shall we do? All your ideas will get us nowhere if we can't see. It's all right, said Bayami. I'll light it again in the morning. When I make men, they'll call it sun. The fire will go out every night, and I'll light another one every morning. Men will know that when sun comes, it's time to wake up out of their sleep. What's sleep? Asked Punjil. Oh, it's like death, but not death, explained Bayami. Men need to rest from living. It tires them out. How odd, said Punjil. It's an aboriginal tale. The Sun's Daughter. Sun and Moon were talking. Aren't men and women ugly, said Sun. They look up at me with such funny, screwed-up faces, poor things. Moon smiled at her in surprise. Men and women? Oh, I think they're very pretty, he said, those soft, silvery faces, and such sweet smiles when they look up at me. Now Sun looked surprised, and it didn't take her long to feel jealous. Well, if they won't smile at me, I'll burn them up, she thought. Now every day at noon, she visited her daughter's house in the highest part of the sky. and there she burned with such fierce heat she parched the earth and started a fever among the people. They ran for help to the wise little men. Oh, little men, what can we do? Our parents and our children and our friends are all dead, and we will die too if you don't help us destroy the sun. And the wise little men shook their heads. You want to destroy the sun? Well, put the rattlesnake where he can bite her tomorrow when she visits her daughter's house. But the rattlesnake was too quick, and when the sun's daughter flew to her door to welcome her mother, he bit her instead on the forehead, and she died. And the sun sank down into a dark place to mourn for her lost child. Oh, little men, what can we do? We're in the dark, day and night, and nothing will grow, and we can't keep warm. We'll die if you don't help us bring back the sun. You want to bring back the sun? Well, you'd better fetch her daughter back from the ghosts in the darkening land. Take a box to put her in, but whatever you do, don't open the box before you get her home. They went to the darkening land and found the sun's daughter dancing with the other ghosts. They caught tight hold of her, tucked her in the box, and started home. "Let me out! Let me out! I'm so thirsty!" she cried, but they took no notice. "Oh, let me out! Let me out! I'm so hungry!" she cried, but they took no notice. "Oh, let me out! Let me out! I can't breathe!" she cried when they were nearly there, and they opened the box just a very little to give her some air. Whoosh! Something flew past them into the trees, and there was a red bird singing on the branch. When the sun knew that her daughter had turned into a red bird, she began to cry, and she cried so long there was a flood on the earth. Oh, little men, what can we do? The whole world will be drowned, and we'll die too if you don't help us make the sun smile again. You want to make the sun smile? Well, you better send some of your best-looking young people to sing and dance for her. At first, the sun wouldn't look, but nobody can shut their ears to music, however sad they are. When the drummer changed the song, the sun lifted her head, and when she saw how beautiful they were, she smiled and stopped her crying. A Cherokee Indian story. The Disobedient Sun Child. In a house by the sea, behind a high fence, there lived a mother and her little boy. He was a beautiful little boy, shining like the sun. They kept themselves to themselves. The boy didn't play much with the other children. "Yeah, who's your father then? Don't you even know?" they teased him. "Not common like yours," he shouted back, but he ran home angry to his mother. "Well, who is my father, then?" Thoughtfully, she stirred the pot. "Years ago," she said, "I was so beautiful that my father was afraid of what might become of me. So he shut me up here behind the high fence away from men, but no high fence could stop your father." "Well, who is he?" "He watched me all day, and at night he hid his brightness under a cloak and visited me. And then you were born." "But who is he?" The boy stamped his foot. "Tell me." "The sun himself, of course." "Of course," said the boy in amazement. He couldn't help boasting to the other. "My father is a prince and lives in the sky."
"Oh, yeah?
Mine's a fish and he lives up a tree." "If he's a prince, why haven't you got a new shirt?" And they strutted off holding their noses and then fell about with laughter. When the sun child grew to be a man, he set off in a canoe to find his father. "Tell him I don't forget him," said his mother. The sun child paddled and paddled to the place where the sun rises. It grew dark and the stars came out. Strange sea creatures swam along beside him and gazed at him with eyes like lamp. "Father!" he shouted at last. The red tip of the sun showed above the horizon, and a great roar made the sea tremble. Who dares to call me father? I am your son from Tonga Tabu, and I have come to live with you. Go home, boy. I've no time to spare. I have to light up all the islands in the ocean. Go home to your own good people. Father, I'm not like them. Let me stay. No, said the sun, and he slid a little further over the horizon, changing the dark sea to dancing colors. But listen, boy. In the moon, there are two shells, Munaia and Melaia. Beware Munaia. Take Melaia as a gift from me. It will make you a leader among men. And the sun sailed up into the sky, and the day began. All that long day, the sun child brooded in his canoe. When night came, instead of stealing Melaia, as his father had told him to do, he stole Munaia out of the moon. Perhaps this one will make me more than a leader among men. Perhaps it will make me a god like my father. He stood in his canoe and held the curved pink shell up high in the moonlight. From all the corners of the sea, the fish came swimming towards Munaia. Whales and dolphins and sharks and swordfish. Big, little, silver, rainbow-colored, fat and flat fish. Nearer and nearer they came. Look, I'm a god. The fish are coming to do me honor. The water frothed and foamed, and the fish leaped up towards the glowing shell, and in the confusion the canoe was overturned, and the proud sun child sank deep into the dark water and drowned. Ah, if only he'd taken his father's gift, who knows what he might have become? A Polynesian Tale. You've been listening to three stories from Legends of the Sun and Moon by Eric and Tessa Hadley, published by Cambridge University Press. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gil Fillon. The executive producer is Carla Tonella. And I'm Ellen Whitcher.
And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Tom Hassler. Today I'll be reading the book, The Foolish Frog, by Pete Seeger and Charles Seeger. Once upon a time, there was a farmer walking down the road. He was whistling a tune. But he scratched his head. And he said to himself, "Doggone, I wish I had some words. Wish I had some words for my song. Why, all I've got is the melody." Just then he came to a little brook, and he leaned on the railing of the bridge. Down there was a big old bullfrog hopping from bank to bank. The bullfrog looked up, saw the farmer, thought he'd show off. He took an extra special big hop. Kersplash, he fell in the mud and got all dirty. Well, the farmer laughed and laughed, and then he started singing. Way down south in the Yankety Yank, a bullfrog jumped from bank to bank just because he'd nothing better for to do. He walked a little further, and he started singing a little more, and he said, he stubbed his toe, fell in the water. You could hear him holler for a mile and a quarter. That's because he's nothing better for to do. Now the farmer went down that road, feeling very proud of himself for making up such a song. And he went into the corner store, bought some groceries, and said, oh, before I go home, I must teach y'all my new song. The storekeeper said, go home, I'm busy here. See all these summer people? Well, I won't pay you my money unless you let me sing my song. Oh, all right, sing it and get it over with. Well, the farmer started singing, and the storekeeper shouted, hey, that's a good tune. Gather around, everybody, we'll have us a party. And sure enough, they were all a-stamping on the floor, drinking the free strawberry pop, passing around the free soda crackers. Meanwhile, back home, wives and children were sitting down to eat supper. And where's Father? Mother says, children, you'd better run down to the corner store and fetch your old man. He's probably wasting his time as usual. All the children ran down the road, and they ran inside the store. And when they heard the music, they forgot all about giving him the message. And the children, they just started singing. Well, way down south in the Yankety Yank. And you know, the children were stamping on the floor, and they was drinking the free strawberry pop and eating the free soda crackers. Well, in every farmhouse, it was the same situation. All the mothers said, this has gone far enough. Do they expect us to cook all day and nobody show up for supper? And they walked down the road, a-waving their frying pans. And when they got near the store and they heard all that pretty music, they forgot all about being angry. And they dropped their frying pans and ran inside. And the mothers started, well, way down south in the Yankety Yank. And the mothers, they were all a-drinking the free strawberry pop and eating the free soda crackers and a-stamping on the floor. Well, meanwhile, back in the barn, all the cows said, where's everybody? Where's supposed to be milked? It's getting awful uncomfortable. And the cows, they just walked out of their stalls. They walked right out of the barn, down the road, straight inside that corner store. And you know what? They started, moo, 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 moo. And the cows were stamping on the floor, and they was a-drinking the free strawberry pop, and they were eating the free soda crackers. Well, out in the barnyard, all the chickens said, where are we, everybody? We're supposed to be fed. We're getting hungry. And the chickens hopped over the fence, hopped down the road, and they got down there far enough to hop inside the corner store. You know what happened next? And the feathers were flying through the air. And the chickens were stamping on that floor. And they was drinking a free strawberry pop, eating the free soda crackers. Meanwhile, all the barns started talking. They said, we feel so empty without any cows and without any chickens. I guess we'll have to go find them. The barns picked themselves up off their foundations. They galoomphed down the road. And they all squeezed inside that corner store, believe it or not. Ever hear a rusty hinge on a barn door? Well, that's the way they all sounded. And out in the fields. Yep, all the grass said, where is everybody? The cows are supposed to come and eat us. I guess we'll have to go find them. So the grass picked itself up, and it swished down the road, and it swished inside that corner store. Swish, 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 swish. And when the grass was gone, the fields were gone, And when the fields were gone, the banks of the brook were gone. And the brook said, I don't have anything to bubble between. So the brook bubbled down the road, and it bubbled up inside the corner store. And the brook was bubbling up and down the stairway. And the grass was growing out the chimney. And there were feathers flying through the air, the cow's tail swishing out the windows, and everybody's drinking the free soda pop and eating the free soda crackers and stamping on the floor. Well, there was the bullfrog in midair. He looked down. There was nothing underneath him. He looked over. There was nothing to land on. He said, where am I? The only thing left was the road. He started hopping down that road. Hey, what's that racket down there at the corner store? Why, they're singing about me. And he was so proud that he puffed himself up with pride. And he puffed, and he puffed, and he puffed, and he puffed, and pow! He exploded in all directions. Cows, barns, chickens, farmers, wives, children, the whole corn store went up in the air. Everybody floated down through the sky. They all landed right where they were supposed to be the whole time. Sat down, eating supper, feeling kind of foolish for themselves. Well, the next day they went out to try and find the frog. They looked high. They looked low. Well, strawberry pop bottles and soda crackers in all directions, but no frog. So all there is left of that old silly frog is his song. Might as well sing it once again, you know. Way down south in the Yankety Yank, a bullfrog jumped from bank to bank just because he'd nothing better for to do. He stubbed his toe and fell in the water. You could hear him holler for a mile and a quarter just because he'd nothing better for to do. You've been listening to the book The Foolish Frog by Pete Seeger and Charles Seeger, published by Macmillan. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gilfillan. The executive producer is Carla Tonella. And I'm Tom Hassler. We'll be right back.